is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Afghanistan. I welcome Bill Raja of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. He and his colleagues keep the Long War Journal. And Hussain Haqqani, former ambassador from Pakistan to the United States of the Hudson Institute, to comment on Afghanistan and Pakistan in the news. Bill, I begin with the sound of explosions. This is dated June 12th. Simultaneous explosions in northern and eastern Afghanistan killed at least one Taliban militant and wounded 10 others. At the same time, Afghanistan's ruling Taliban said their security forces had killed at least 8 key militants of the self-proclaimed Islamic State Khorasan and captured 3 others at the so-called ISIS-K base in Talakan. Is this describing resistance against the Taliban that has weight, Bill? And what do we know about these simultaneous bombings? Over the last 20 years, simultaneity always meant al-Qaeda. Good evening to you, Bill.
Good evening, John. Yes, we know very little about the origin of those 3 bombings. We haven't had any claims from the Islamic State. What we do know is the Islamic State has a persistent presence in Afghanistan. The United Nations recently, its sanctions and monitoring team reported that it probably has anywhere from 1,500 to 4,000 fighters in Afghanistan. That's probably a reasonable estimate. But there's also another form of resistance, and that's from what's known as the National Resistance Front. And there's also some other groups that are popping up that I'm researching at the moment. And these are led by Ahmad Shah Massoud's son, Ahmad Massoud, of the Panjshiri tribal leader. And a lot of their activities are confined to the Panjshir province in central Afghanistan, but the group and others related to it are operating in some of these areas that where these bombings took place. You know, without a claims responsibility, it's difficult to know. I would describe this as very low level insurgency activity at the moment. The Taliban, you know, still retains a firm grip on all 34 provinces. These attacks are more nuisance and harassment at this point in time. That doesn't mean that that both the Islamic State couldn't increase its attacks or the National Resistance Front could step it up as well. The former, the Islamic State, you know, it is limited in what it can do. It doesn't have any foreign state sponsors like the National Resistance Front has support from Tajikistan and probably India and some other countries. It doesn't make friends in the region. It doesn't play well with other terrorist groups. I would see, you know, in the long run, I think a bigger threat to Afghanistan is to the Taliban is the National Resistance Front.
And Bill, is there significance in the geography here? Badakhshan, Kunduz, and Kunar provinces, are they borderland provinces? And is the borderland Tajikistan? What is on the other side of the border?
Yeah, so Badakhshan borders Tajikistan, absolutely. And Kunduz borders both Tajikistan and Uzbekistan. So this is where the National Resistance Front can get support. But also, the Islamic State is known to be heavily attempting to recruit from Tajik and Uzbek jihadists who may be disaffected with the Taliban keeping a closer rein on groups like the Turkestan Islamic Party and the Uzbekistan, the Islamic Movement Uzbekistan, because these groups, the Taliban wants to keep these groups' activity outside of Afghanistan limited as it attempts to consolidate its gains inside of Afghanistan. And individuals who might be more fire-breathing, the more red-blooded jihadists, want the jihad now, they could turn the message the Islamic State can give to them is, hey, the Taliban are keeping you down, but we'll allow you to conduct attacks outside of Afghanistan.
And the announcement by the Taliban that it's had a shootout with the ISIS-K, is that routine, Bill, for them to come forward to the microphone like this? Have we seen this before? It seemed unusually coincidental with these attacks.
Yeah, we have seen this before. A couple of months ago, the Taliban announced that in Nangarhar province, which was one of the several strongholds for the Islamic State, that it captured around 500 and another 500 Islamic State fighters basically surrendered and joined the Taliban. So we have seen these types of announcements at the, in the past, whether this is a coincidence, the attacks and the announcement of the raid, whether that's coincidence or it's intentional on the Taliban's part. Very difficult to know. You know, one of the biggest problems with covering Afghanistan right now is the media black hole that exists. All we get is what the Taliban says, what the Islamic State says, and what the National Resistance Front says. And there's a really good article at the Washington Post late last week, which discussed the fighting in Panjshir. And basically, the Washington Post throws up its hands and says, you know, these guys are saying this, these guys are saying that, and we can't confirm anything.
Mr. Ambassador, a very good day to you. I read from Pakistan Today within these last days. Islamabad, Pakistan, Tehrik-e-Insaf, chairman, PTI, the political party, Imran Khan, said that his party wants immediate elections in the country, as elections are the only way forward and the solution to political and economic problems being faced by the country ahead. At the same time, we have news from London, Financial Times. Pakistan unveils budget aimed to woo IMF and fend off Imran Khan. Subhead, new government seeks to raise spending and cut deficit amid protests led by ousted PM. This raises the question of Khan's aggression is not just rabble-rousing in the streets, a.k.a. troublemaking, but also has to do with the fundamentals of Pakistan's governance. A budget dispute with the IMF suggests that the government is in need of cash or guarantees. Khan is calling for new elections. Is all this impractical? Is this more of Khan's calling attention to himself, or is the government suddenly shaky? Good day to you, Mr. Ambassador.
Good day. The government is not shaky, I think. It's not strong because Pakistan is inherently a crisis state. The economy is in a poor condition. Khan made it worse. The pandemic made it worse. So it was various factors. But the new government essentially inherited a huge budget deficit, a broken down sort of program with IMF. It's trying to repair that. Khan had reinstated subsidies that he had himself withdrawn in a deal with the IMF. He reinstated them just before leaving office so that it would create problems for the new government. Look, he's a classic narcissist. It's all about Khan for Khan. The interesting thing, however, is that while he threatened that after his last march, he threatened that he will have another march in 6 days, he didn't follow up on it. It seems that he's backing off a little bit. He was engaging in confrontation with the military. The military leadership has pushed back. Some of the retired military officers who were supporting Khan, their pensions have been stopped by the military on grounds that they are doing things that are not conducive to a healthy relationship between a retired officer and the institution that he served before. Those kind of pressures will actually weigh on Khan's efforts to try and mobilize a mass opposition. Moreover, a populace that is dealing with double-digit inflation, a heat wave that is unprecedented at this time of the year, they're not going to march in the streets for Khan. So a lot more activity on social media, a lot more activity in the media in terms of statements that are, you know, Khan knows how to generate headlines. But really, I think the streets of Pakistan right now are more worried about where is the money going to come from to keep the rupee afloat. The rupee has fallen down to 204 to the dollar. You and I last spoke and it was 200. So it's 4 rupees further eroded in the value. It's really tough for the ordinary Pakistani. And really, an election is not going to solve anything because we will probably end up having a large number of seats for the two major parties that are forming the coalition right now, some for Khan, but will they be able to work together?
I mentioned the FT article points to trouble ahead in terms of inflation, cost of living. The Sharif government raised domestic oil prices by a third. This is in response to the IMF, reports the FT. Also, the same time, electricity prices are going up. Domestic gas prices are up 50% during the over the last year. This points to, you say, the heat wave. This points to trouble that would be ordinarily weighed on any government, and the next elections are summer 2023 at the latest. So is Khan banking on disorder caused by cost of living and aiming at the summer elections?
Anyone who is in opposition in Pakistan depends on that. But at the same time, the Pakistani public has become relatively resilient and also realizes that just marching in the streets is not going to change the economic fundamentals. Pakistan imports oil. Pakistan imports a lot more than it exports. And it's essentially an unproductive economy. Even this new budget that everybody is praising has a major anomaly, which is that the amount that it allocates for defense is disproportionately higher than anything that is spent on law and order, healthcare, education. And most of it goes for salaries and pensions. So Pakistan doesn't get a better quality defense as a result. But at the same time, it keeps feeding its huge military, which is a behemoth. And no one can actually address some of these structural problems. So it's all about juggling. And right now, it's Shahbaz Sharif, the prime minister, whose job it is to juggle. If tomorrow he loses power and Imran Khan comes back to power, he'll have to do the same juggling act. So essentially, it's a fight not to solve the problem, but hey, who is going to manage the problem for the foreseeable future?
The Pakistan-Afghanistan story continues with investigations in the United States. And when we come back, we're going to turn to how did we get into this tangle of Afghanistan in the hands of the Taliban and Pakistan in turmoil? Where is the United States in this story? Hossein Haqqani is former ambassador from Pakistan to the United States. He's at the Hudson Institute. Bill Raggio, senior fellow of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, keeps the Long War Journal. I'm John Batchelor.